Another baker, reel four.
Right, as I was saying, we set the Bren gun up just traversing the track, which meant that all bullets would be directed straight at anyone that came down. We had them come down, three Japanese, one holding a white flag. We challenged them. Straight away they dropped down to fire. But before they, as soon as the flag dropped, our Bren gunner started firing and shot all three of them through the knees. We recovered the bodies, or at least we recovered the Japanese, brought them in. The MO came down, Doc Williams, and he injected them with the morphine to save the pain that they got. And the only words they spoke was, tea, tea, tea. They kept asking for tea, and which we gave them. And after that, we found out that we'd used all the morphine on these Japanese, and we had none at all to give to our wounded that was lying up on the track waiting to be evacuated. And eventually, there we all, when the Americans came in with their planes, bombed and machine gunned the Japanese positions 3 days later, and we eventually withdrew successfully, and we had to put to sleep all our injured that couldn't walk, including one major, no, captain, that had his leg sawn off at the scene of the battle by the doctor, and we couldn't evacuate, and he was put to sleep by the our own major, Daniels.
Who had to, him.
No, he had to smother him. And that is the Japanese tenacity of coming down suicide squads, which you've got to be prepared for. Eventually we did evacuate in war and indoor, and made our way back to Oktor, which we knew was safe, and then back to Aberdeen to be re-equipped and collect more ammunition. And then we operated from Aberdeen in and out of the stronghold onto various positions, harassing the Japanese as best as we could. And our platoon, I think the full platoon went down, about 30 men. We were sent back to Thetka Jin under a Major Hoffman, who was the muleteer officer, to find out what had really happened to the 4-5 recce. And we found the bodies still lying on the road where the trucks had run over them.
Which trucks?
Japanese, going to and from Thetka Jin, indoor, after we'd left. It was a few days later that we went back to Thetka Jin. And the bulk of us stayed outside Thetka Jin, about a mile away. And Major Hoffman, another officer, and two men went forward to reconnoitre the battle area of Thetka Jin, and they found the dead mules, dead bodies, and they just had run over them. So we withdrew.
How many of them?
Well, I don't know. They saw about 20 bodies, and they returned to. We returned then to Oktor, and then back to Aberdeen.
So they'd run over wounded?
Well, no, they'd be dead by that time, I should say. They would have run over wounded. They had no compassion at all. And as it was from that battle, as we were withdrawing, we picked up a sergeant from the 4-5 recce, Sergeant Vine, Roy Vine, who's still alive, and who I shall be seeing on Saturday. And we found him on the roadside, wounded. He'd been left behind. They couldn't do anything about it. And we were in the position to pick him up and take him back to Aberdeen with us. And he eventually, I believe, rejoined his... He was flown out to India from Aberdeen, and eventually he rejoined the 4-5 recce, not in India, not in Burma. But that was one thing that many of the senior officers held against Wingate, was the fact that you realised that it was a 50-50 chance of survival if you went into Burma. And the senior officers thought it was a risk shouldn't be taken. That was in Delhi. But as I say, the operation eventually proved how right Wingate was, because it certainly upset the Japanese. Since the war, of course, we've heard, and the Japanese commander of that area said that without the Chindits being in the area, they would have successfully taken Imphal and Kohima. That it cost him 20,000 men to stop and chase the Chindit around the centre of Burma.
How much of the American bombing did you see that relieved the pressure?
All of it. I mean, we were all within a radius of, 1 acre of land. We converged into this side of the stream. And the only casualty we had from the bombing and strafing by the Americans was one man was shot through through his hand, the back of his hand, with a machine gun bullet. And they bombed and strafed within 20, 30 yards of our positions. Well, the main thing was that we put up smoke the mortars to indicate the position of the Japanese, so they got a good idea where it was. I mean, we had smoke indicators all the way around the Japanese positions, and they bombed and strafed that area. We also have, of course, the RAF officer and sergeants with ground to air control, which was directing the bombing and strafing. I mean, it just wasn't all... This is the genius of Wingate. He thought of these things, which proved that if you followed his instructions, then you had a really good chance of surviving, which most of us did.
How much action did you personally see after Indore?
Well, we only saw the action down at White City when we went down to relieve the 77 Brigade for a respite. We cut the road supply route. The Japanese had been attacking and coming up, and we sat on there for 3 days while they regrouped.
At White City.
At White City. And had a breather. And Colonel Wilkinson then had been flown out, ordered out of Burma by Brigadier Ferguson, and taken to hospital. and Major Daniels were in charge, and were given the orders to evacuate our position at midday, by midday on the third day. And at 12:10, the Japanese mounted a fierce counterattack on our positions, and we weren't there. So, right. We had a few wounded there, and I believe that Corporal Fox won his MM there, and Sergeant Chandler won the DCM. He was brought back on a stretcher. We were able to evacuate all our wounded from that action back to Aberdeen, and they were flown out safely to India and hospital.
Did you see Fox and Chandler win their decorations?
No, we were away from them at the time, in a different section.
Whereabouts exactly were you personally at White City?
Well, we were just sitting down on the track. I mean, really speaking, you know, we weren't in White City. We were south of White City, maybe a mile on the main road between the Japanese supply route and the attacking force around White City. It was just a matter that we were blowing up. I mean, we were sitting there. Other patrols or other sections were like the 4-5 recce had reformed then, and they joined in with Mike Calvert, Brigadier Calvert's operation from White City, and we had patrols going round harassing the Japanese on the road further south, blowing up bridges, just to give White City a breather. And then we went back to Aberdeen, went out on various patrols, blowing up and destroying bridges and the railway and that. And eventually we were evacuated from Aberdeen, flew out from Aberdeen, and back to India. And that was the end of our...
Did you fall sick in Burma?
No. Fortunately, I always kept pretty fit, and I took the Mepocrine tablets. We did have one or two, you know, go down with malaria. One particular friend of ours, it was understood that if anything happened like that, that you couldn't carry the men with you as a burden for too far. But we tried to... contact a friend of ours. We've all, you know, kept, most of us kept in close contact, but one we couldn't understand, which was one of the five of us that were really close, Charlie Granger. We tried for 46 years to contact him. We contacted him 2 years ago. And he was ill. We carried him for 2 days, sharing his pack and equipment amongst us. Fortunately, we got a good muleteer who we've never been able to trace, named Frank Gaywood, and he had the pack on the mule part of the time, and we just carried it and eventually recovered. One thing was that we always had a tablespoonful of rum at night. They took rum in with us as a medicinal. And what we did was all of us pulled our rum and gave it to Charlie Granger who to sweat the fever out of him. And it did the trick, but unfortunately, we're glad that we met him again. He died of cancer this February. And quite a few of the Chindits were at his funeral.
Did you have anything to do with the local population?
Not a lot. The idea was taking the Burma Rifles in as interpreters, and they did all the... We did meet up in villages, and we found the... I found the Burmese people for us. Most of them. There were a few traitors, and that, but the majority of Burmese would help you, hide you, and do everything they could to help you. We did buy food off them, but they freely gave us the food, which they could barely afford to. The Japanese were, of course, always taking the food that they could find from the villages. But they did supply us with food for mostly parachute silk, but for silver rupees that we did take in Burma. Each man took about 25 rupees in Burma with him and then put it into a kitty for buying things. So all in all, I would sooner go back to Burma than back to India.
Were the local people Burmans or some other tribes?
Yeah, no. Well, there was, as we went through, we got the Naga Hillmen. One village we went through, we had a supply drop by. There was no one in the village. There was just skulls stuck on posts all the way around. A cannibal tribe had attacked them and killed all the men and taken all the women and children off. We found that out after. This had happened. This was the case. From the, you know, a Burmese interpreter that said what had happened. And, yes, it was rather scary, that was, you know. We had no idea the village was there, but it was such a situation was that you had to have a supply drop in any area when you ran out, that any area that got about 200 square foot of floor space. And as they came floating down over in the Naga Hills, of course, the currents took them far and wide, and you had to go out searching for them. And this is when we came back across this little village that was just these skulls on top.
You said that you met Mountbatten. How did he compare with Wingate?
Well, Mountbatten met us. We went especially to this camp, staging camp, I suppose it was. And told the camp commandant, who wasn't in the Chindits, it was a place where we were staging ready to get on the train, he issued instructions that no bullshit, as he said, would be necessary. So when we got to the area where he was supposed to address us before we went into Burma, they whitewashed rocks and everything, cleaned it up, cut grass and everything for him. And Mountbatten just picked up a box and he walked about a quarter of a mile away from it, gave them a lambasting, told us that he'd asked for no bullshit and addressed us. And I suppose that camp commandant, disobeying an order, would be in trouble by the time we got into Burma. But he was marvellous, Mountbatten was. He gave you, he was the one that backed Wingate, I think. And when Wingate was killed, when he came to see us at one of our functions, he said that he tried to come into Burma, to Aberdeen and to White City, to console with us about the loss, and being Commander-in-Chief, the Imperial General Staff wouldn't allow it, which is, you know, obvious, really. But he was that kind of man. He was another one that wouldn't expect any man to do anything that he couldn't do himself.
How did Wingate and Mountbatten compare to see in person?
Well, of course, as I say, really speaking, Wingate, when we last saw him, both times, when he addressed us when we went in to Burma, he'd just recovered from typhoid. I think he'd just come out of hospital. So he was looking ill. And when we saw him at, and he issued the order of the day at Aberdeen, one day, you know, I forget where it goes now, you will be proud to say I was there. And he looked ill then. He was white and drawn. But according to what they said, that he'd had typhoid just weeks before, all during the training, he was in hospital. But he'd issued his instructions before, and as I say, one or two battalions had ignored the training schedule he'd laid down, and they were in trouble within 3 or 4 days. As regards marching, they were shattered. We marched in, we trained to march in, and, you know, we were fit before we went in, and we were battle-hardened, well, not battle-hardened, but our bodies were hardened. We'd been carrying 70 pounds of equipment around with us and manoeuvres in it. I mean, we never took, only in indoor and in war did we take our packs off when we were in action. We fought in our packs. That's why I forgot that I got mine on when I tried to go through the bamboo fence. But that's what it was. And as I say, Lord Louis was a gentleman and a leader. So was the officer of my battalion and the NCOs.
How long did it take you to recover from being in the Burmese jungle?
We had 10 days hospital treatment at Camilla. What their hospital treatment was, that they bunged you full of eggs. That was to get your stomach back to something like normal. Because, of course, I mean, our stomachs had shrunk so much in operations and in training that very little was needed. I was just saying to Gladys, the South African today, that after we came back from indoor in war, we had a supply drop, and they dropped loaves and peaches, and each man had half of a piece of bread and about four slices of peaches, and that bread put you out of action for 2 or 3 days. It blew the inside of your stomach up. Nobody had thought of that. See, we hadn't been used to anything that was yeast or anything in there, and as soon as we had that, we were all down with stomach cramps. But of course, we were in the stronghold then, so it didn't really matter. I mean, we were back for relaxation and 3 days special care.
Can you tell me some of the funny things that happened?
Well, one particular instance, we were going down, I think it was to, from Uktor to Indore, and we were always dispersed into the jungle when we made camp, walked off in, and it was all marched in single file. And this particular day, we were in the camp, and it was reported that Indian insurgents were coming down the track with leaflets with some Burmese guides and what have you. The Indian insurgents had distributed the, you know, get out of India leaflets amongst the Burmese and get out of Burma as well. So we lined our top machine gunner, who was a regular soldier, up on the track, and one or two riflemen to challenge them and stop them. And as they came into view, they were challenged, and they shot off into a small bush in the jungle with about, well, there was 200 rounds of ammunition expended during that operation, and we never even found them. They'd gone down a track that was we knew nothing about, and the Major Tevendale was boasting in a group of officers that he knew it had come from his section, that at last they'd have some results. And the results was that we reported and 200 rounds of ammunition had been fired, and we hadn't even found a leaflet. but they captured them farther along and flew them out to Burma for information.
Flew them out to India?
Yeah, from Burma to India. Someone else captured them, and they got the bags of leaflets, you know, get out of them. So that was one thing. Of course, we never lived that down from the rest of the battalion when they got to know about the special marksman. Also on the lake, when we were trapped at, in war, I had the Piat gun, and my number one was Jack Badrick, who later became Sergeant Badrick, and we were on guard duty this particular night, and we saw what we thought at the first was waves of the Japanese coming ashore. We could hear the boats going up and down the lake. As I say, they were ferrying troops up to the northern part of the lake, to Setkajin. And we saw what we thought was waves of Japanese come up off the side of the lake, but we couldn't be sure. And if you woke anyone during the night and it was a false alarm, you did really catch out in the morning. So we stood there, petrified, or at least we lay there behind the Bren and the machine gun, petrified for about 5 minutes, and to make sure, and we realised it was the rushes in the wind coming up and down. But believe you me, at the time, that was a situation that is one of the things that you learnt in training. Make sure of what you're seeing before you, did any action of firing. We went into Burma and you couldn't speak above a whisper. During training, we used to have the 5 days, up till midday Saturday, you were on a charge if you spoke above a whisper. From Saturday, they'd blow the bugle, and from Saturday lunchtime till midnight on Sunday, you could make as much noise as you went. So as soon as that bugle went on midday Saturday, you never heard such a din in your life. Everything that they could make a noise with, they made a noise with. And that was the way we went into Burma, not being able to speak above a whisper. So, you know, this was instilled into you, that you, you know, don't wake people up that's been marching or in action and that till you're certain. But at the time that it's happening, you're very close to doing so.